Right, guys, welcome back to Coaching Conversations with Pete and Yas. But before we get to today's episode, just a quick announcement from our partnership with St. Mary's University Twickenham.
Yeah, so thanks for having me. I'm Ashley, our performance football coaching course lead, as you know, as a member of our alumni. Our course is unique around the world, so we believe that we have a distance learning model that kind of works for everyone, regardless of where they are in the world. They can study football performance coaching from their environment and put it into their context.
Amazing. And who is it for?
So we really have lots of different unique opportunities. So you can be a pro license coach that we've had in the past. You could be a level 2 UEFA B coach. It's about putting it into your context. So we'll expose students to match analysis, contemporary football coaching cultures, and they can put that into their own practice and improve their knowledge and understanding of the game.
Thank you for that, Ash. And as an alumni member of St. Mary's University Twickenham, I'm proud to announce the partnership that we've got going on, where each week myself and Pete will be delivering conversations around different how-to elements, analysis tips, and obviously some insights from our own experiences as coaches and coach developers. So catch that on YouTube and every week on all major platforms where you can hear it in audio form as well. Welcome back, everyone, to Coaching Conversation with Pete and Yas. My name's Yas.
My name's Pete.
And we're here just to pick up on the weekly conversations around all things coaching related. And today's topic, we'll be looking at player-led versus player-centered. So Pete, straight over to you. What are your thoughts? Where'd your mind go in with this one straight away?
Oh, right. Okay. Although they kind of sound quite similar, they are actually quite different. Because sometimes people think that player-led means that the players take all the ownership of all of the session. Yeah. But we have to still remember that we are coaches and we still have to give them some guidance, and sometimes we might assume that they know something when they don't really know it. But the piece around player centred, this is where we as a coach start to recognise the feelings of the players themselves. So how do they feel about your session? How do they feel about your team? How do they feel about the club? How do they feel about the environment that you've created? How do they feel that, do they feel that they've got something, some input into that environment? So, you know, that player-centered, that idea where you're thinking about what the players need. So even something as simple as, well, what tactics are we using? So if we're using certain tactics, are we actually using tactics that suit the players, or are we using tactics that we've decided that that's the way we're going to play and we're going to get the players to fit into that narrative?
No, that's an interesting one, because I totally agree. I think it's two very subtle differences in, obviously, the language, but massive differences in what the meaning is, right? I think a lot of people, in my experiences, go down the route of, because it's player-led, that means it's player-centred. But not always the case, right? Sure. And I think for me that it's important that we identify and examine that if it's player-centred, it could still be coach-led.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And there's a massive difference. I mean, player-led is what it says on the tin. It's led by the players. But again, referring back to your point, is that the players may not always know what they're leading or what's best for them in that moment. So I think as a coach, we need to be really careful in terms of, if we're going to make it player-led, potentially helping the players understand the reasons behind it and maybe some of the expectations, just to manage that as well. So just on that then, what are some of the strategies that maybe you've used in your experiences in the past around how to get players to take lead?
I think some of it is around this idea of teaching the players something first, because you can't lead something unless you have some information, unless you know something. So it would be like in a class, you want the students to lead the lesson, but you'd have to have taught them something before they can lead the lesson. So what I've always done is this: I've said, right, this is the way we're going to play. This is the style of play. Now, what I've first done is I work out, can the players do it? That's the first thing, because if they can't do it, it's no point going down that road.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting one. I think the one thing I would challenge there though is, do they need to have been taught it, or did they have just been, if you like, somewhat referred to it? So almost like an outline's been laid out and maybe an outcome has been put out for them, or an expectation has been put out for them, but maybe not the, if you like, the nitty-gritty itself.
Yeah, the players will always take on knowledge based on their capabilities. So some players will be able to, you'll be able to give them much more complex instructions than others. Some players just say, right, point me in the right, in the direction, and let me just get on with it. Don't need you to tell me anything else. Other players, they want you to explain to them why you're doing it, why it's this, what's their role in it. They want to know that. And that's that piece where the player-led and player-centred, they kind of, you know, dovetail.
Yeah.
But knowing what the players know. So I'll give you an example of this. At one of the clubs I was at, we decided that we were going to play out from the back, and we're going to play out from the back no matter what, right? But to be able to do that, we had to have strategies, because teams would work out they're playing out from the back. So what we did, we found four ways of playing out from the back. And what we realised that we could use any one of those four at any time during the game. But then we started to realise that teams were starting to cotton on to it after a few weeks. So I said to the players, well, what do you think we should do? And so some of the players started to say, well, what could we do this, this, this and this? Or what about if we tried this? I went, okay, let's try it in training. So we tried it, and then we go, all right, okay. So then we found another four ways of getting out. Now, what then happened was we had eight ways of getting out from playing out from the back. Now, no, I don't care who you are. If you've got eight ways of playing out from the back, the opposition have got a problem. But it was the players that came up with the first four ways. But they wouldn't have come up with those first four ways if we had the foundations in the first four. What were we trying? How were we trying to get out? What was it we were looking? And our vehicle that we used was movement.
Yeah.
I kept saying to them, it's not going to be good passing that gets you out. It's going to be good movement.
Yeah.
Because you'll move them about.
There's two things that kind of my mind's ticking on. Let's start with that piece around movement first, and we'll come back to it. Talk to us about, you know, what's your thoughts and what's your understanding of good movement? Because this is often, I think, misinterpreted as well in terms of what the nuances or the variables that exist within it to make it effective enough. So what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on movement are around this idea of either you're going to make movement to release you to get on the ball, or your movement's going to release somebody else in your team. Or the third thing it's going to do, it's going to make them do something that they didn't really want to do, or they feel that they have to do to stop you from doing what you want to do. That sounds quite complicated.
Yeah.
No. It's nice. I think you're spot on. So for me, I kind of break it down in three ways rather than in two. So it's regardless of who you are, an element of movement needs to take place. But actually, sometimes no movement is also effective as well. And I think the key is to relate the movement to them positioning. So position, are you positioning yourself, or are you moving into a position that will allow you to receive potentially? Obviously you can't, you're not necessarily going to get the ball, and I think that's the important piece, especially with young players, to make them sure that they understand that just because you've moved doesn't mean you demand and you're entitled to the ball now. And then the second piece is your positioning. Is it going to be one that allows someone else to move into? So it might be like, I'm emptying out a space so you can fill it. Or the flip side is actually, is the movement that I'm creating not for someone else to move into, but actually the person on the ball to now penetrate into? And then obviously the kind of an afterthought of that is, well, another piece of movement might actually be how you provide security for your team once the ball's moved beyond you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course it does. That's the thing about movement.
Yeah.
Is it can do so many different things. And if we talk about player and player centered, if the players understand why they're doing what they're doing, it makes it easier for them to go out and perform.
Yeah.
Because now what they do is they start realizing, well, actually, I haven't moved, but I don't need to move because I now found myself in space, as you just said about, you know, sometimes standing still is great. Because, you know, that's the thing that is, if movement's going on around, right, then you might not have to move.
100%.
You know, it's that thing where not everybody can stand still and it'll be all right. Somebody at some stage is going to have to move.
But yeah, 100%. I think it's also subjective to where the ball is, right? So I think, but importantly, what's within that, if you go back into the player-led and player-centered piece, I was smiling earlier because you said some players need to know the why. That's that. I think that's me. So I need to know, right? If you're going to get me to do something, you got to tell me why. I think the key part, is like, I don't have to necessarily agree with you. But if I can understand the rationale behind it, then I start to maybe accept it for what it is, although I might not necessarily agree with it in terms of it being my method, if you like. So I think that piece is really key, and it kind of it takes my mind to this piece around the importance of procedural knowledge and declarative knowledge, and that. I think far too often, and we've all been there now, you know, I've been guilty of this as well.
Explain those two terms.
So procedural knowledge in the sense that I'm just giving you the what. I'm telling you, right, Pete, I need you to do this, or Pete, I want you to do that. But I'm not actually supporting it with any sort of declarative knowledge to help you understand the rationale behind it. Because if you knew, as an example, I'm saying, right, Pete, I need you to go and do this at this point, because off the back of that, I'm expecting this to happen. Now, the key piece within that is come back to the piece that you talked about, four ways of playing out from the back. So my question was going to be, actually, is it that they came up with four different ways of playing out from the back, or they were more conscious of what was stopping it in the first place. So therefore, it's not actually different ways of playing up in the back, but actually the response to what the opposition are doing in those moments. So in terms of, you know, they might have had four ways of playing out from the back, but which might be effective when the opposition might not necessarily be pressing through the middle or pressing out wide, whatever that might look like. But now all of a sudden we've recognised, well, actually these are four methods which allow us to get success when the opposition are doing this. However, we'll come back to that what if moment. Now we've got four different ways that we've developed, because we now know that those methods aren't for opposition plan A, it's actually opposition plan B. These are four. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and it's a bit of both, really, because you know the players recognised when they were being stopped, and they started to, because they were getting lots of success to start off with. Then when it stopped, then they started to go, well, actually, you know, can we think of something else? And actually, one of the ways they thought of coming out, they came out with it on the day of the game. They just, you know, they just tried something, and I watched it and I was at the side, I went, like that one, you know. But I didn't say anything. And so, but what I wanted to know, I asked them at half time, what made you do that? And they said, well, they were doing this and blah blah blah, and the other we couldn't get out, so we decided to do this. And I went, okay, great.
Do you not think there's a piece before that? Because this is something that I guess in my own coaching I'm quite big on, in terms of If I was to describe what my outcomes are within a coaching environment, typically would be going after something that relates to players having a greater awareness of.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
The game and what's going on in the moment, so that effectively they can get to a point where if they can better reflect and better self-diagnose on the situations, they'll probably be more useful in coming up with solutions, right? So you said, you know, what made you do that? I'm thinking, well, I probably would have started with, do you guys understand what you just did?
Yeah, but I see, for me, because language is important, and for me it was a case of, I wanted them to recognise that I'd recognised that they'd done something else. And I wanted to know, my own curiosity was around, well, what made them think of that? But that's the important thing about when you allowing players to lead, or should I say, is allowing players to make decisions. What you're trying to do is you're trying to get them to be self-sufficient. What about the day when you, as the coach, have lost your voice and you can't speak, or you're up in the stand because you've got a six-match ban? Or I'm not saying that everybody should.
Speaking from experience, yeah.
Of course not. No. But all those sort of things is the players have got to be able to, because the thing about it is that as a player, if you think about it, if you're a coach and you've played, your referencing is to you and what you did when you were playing at a particular time in the football landscape. Because if we're looking at football nowadays, it seems to be changing like every 2 years, something's changing. So you now start to think about that. So the knowledge that we had that when we were playing, that's old knowledge. The new players now, they've got new knowledge. They've got stuff that they've learned before they've even come to you, and what they've learned with their friends and so on and so forth. So they can teach you stuff. So this is the piece of when we're talking about player-led. Are you allowing the players to teach you? You know?
I think you're spot on, because I think if we're genuinely there to support the players and help them develop, but we've got to be open to hearing what they've got to know, what they've got to tell us first.
That's right, yeah.
And it's interesting because obviously some of the challenges that come with that is that some of the players may have little to no experience with any coaching. Some people might have been coached. Some people might have been coached well and vice versa, right? So I think what kind of questions would you be asking? What kind of, you know, how would you set an environment that allows the players to do that with without fear of...
Do you know something else? We are, I don't think we actually realise this at times, yeah, and I'm starting to see it now. We're going into a period now where many of the players who we coach, especially at that middle at that age, at 17, 18, 19, they're already starting coaching courses.
Yeah.
So when you're coaching them, they listen to you and they're thinking to themselves, this guy don't know what he's doing. Or this guy, oh yeah, I'm feeling this guy or this girl, whatever it is. Because they now, they've got some knowledge.
They've got one lens on that. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, because they've done a bit of coaching. Some of them might already be working in the coaching landscape somewhere along the line. So you can't always think that you're fooling them and you're baffling them. So you have to think about it from this idea of, my thing, especially much more now, around player led, is that voice. Is that voice that they have. One of the clubs I was at, they used to talk about player first, player last. Yeah, so the players spoke first and then they spoke last. So you'd have your bit, but that your bit would be in the middle.
Right.
So now you're starting to find out what they know, what they're feeling, okay? And then at the end, you're getting to find out what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
So I find that quite interesting. But this piece for us as coaches, we have to start to understand that the players are much more... People say that the kids these days, they've always got their heads in computers technology, and technology and everything else. But that technology also gives them some knowledge. That gives them some stuff that they can come to you with.
Yeah.
That they're quite prepared to voice. Because they are actually much more willing to voice their opinions.
Yeah.
Because the youngsters these days, they've got so many other things that they could be doing.
Yeah.
They really could be doing so many other things.
Yeah.
And I think we have to understand that the talented talented players, they'll say, well, I can do this, but I can also do that as well. You know, I might be really, really good at football, but I'm also really good at basketball and I'm really good at tennis. You know, well, actually, I don't need you shouting at me. I can play tennis and I can just play tennis on my own and I can make my own decisions and I can play the game in the way I want to play it. My coach will guide me, but my coach isn't telling me what to do because I'm the one who's out on the court. And that's the thing about, we want our football players to be more like that, to be able to go, yes, can we make the decision? Can I change this? Can I do this? But within the framework of what we already have. And that's why this idea about, you know, getting the players to lead and make decisions is around, you know, what's happening in the game. Because we've got to take that into account. What's happening in the game? You might do some stuff in training where you give them opportunities to do whatever it is, and the typical one is, okay, tell you what you're going to do is you play the game, you're 2-0 down, you're win. How are you going to stop them from scoring more goals? How are you going to... Now that's, all right. But did the players actually know why they scored the two goals? No? And those are the sort of things we've got to find out.
100%. Know? So, okay, I'm going to throw a question at you then. So what's your favourite player strategy? What's your favourite strategy to get players to take more ownership and lead a little bit more? It could be match day or training environment.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I really have a favourite one. I just think that I work out what do we need at the time. Because, listen, on match day, if you're going for 3 points, you know, you've got to be really careful if they're going to let them lead. And sometimes that might be around if the team's not playing particularly well, and you want to find out what is going on out there. Is there something that you're finding difficult? That's the piece there where you know, because if they're playing well, they don't say anything. So when they're not playing so well.
Do you know what? I'll challenge it, because the thing is that I've had a lot of conversations with coaches recently around similar situation where they've not played well. So I think it's just as important in those moments for them to understand why it's not working.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just think on match days as an example, like regardless of the situation, the way I approach it is almost, I'll observe the game as you will, and you'll make your notes, whatever they are, you know, during the game, whether it's in quarters, halves, or whatever it may be. And at the interval, I put the onus on the players to feedback and reflect. and where in a way where I'd almost get them split up into their units or different areas of the pitch, and I'd ask them, right, okay, what do you think is going well in and out of possession? Because what I'm after in that moment, again, it's that curiosity piece, is I'm trying to see, what are they seeing and experiencing the same things I'm seeing? Because if they are, well, I don't need to talk about it. I might just praise them for the recognition of it in the first place, and I might probe on it, might, you know, suggest that there's a way that we can utilize that information to kind of move things forward, or if we can reinforce something. But equally, if I've made 6 points on my notebook in the build up to that interval, as an example, well, if they've covered four of them, I only need to say two. do you know what I mean?
But also you got to think about, what if they cover none of them? Because the thing about it is, the way they see the game and the way you see the 100%. Game is totally different. And sometimes we're looking for almost like a confirmation bias, aren't we?
Yeah, 100%. Oh, yeah.
I've seen this, and I want you to confirm that I've seen it. But if we don't, if they're not seeing it that way, now that's when we have to start to delve in a little bit more. And it might be that you've gone, I tell you what, as I'm the coach here today, we're 1-0 down, we're going to do this. Because at some stage, you as the coach, you have to make a decision. You have to go, it's 3 points here, right? And again, depending on where you are, if you're working with youngsters, then you know, and I've done this where I've got them to write stuff down, what's going on. Or the other one that I've done is we're going to do three things in defence and we're going to do three things in attack. And so I go, right, have we done this one? And say yes or no. Have we done this one? So on and so forth. We go through all six. Now, once we've gone through all six, I'll then say, right, okay, you said that we haven't done this one and this one very well. Do we need to be better in this area, or is it something else that we need to be better in? And then let them come up with the idea of what they think it is. Because now what I'm doing is I'm saying those six things may be something that we've worked on in training. So I'm not going to give them six things that they've never worked on. It's six things that they've worked on in training, so that they are aware of actually what it is they're trying to do. So even my instructions that I might give them, I say, well, what are the three? What are our three? And you obviously, okay. You know what I mean? And that's how you start to develop this idea of them, I think, of them starting to think about what it is that you want them to achieve in games and even in training to a certain extent. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to get them to focus, because one of the things I remember when I was playing was, don't give me loads and loads of information at half time, because I'm only going to remember a couple of those bits and pieces. I'm not going to remember the eight things that you've just told me. So what I've done in my coaching is, I'm going to give you three things that you're going to talk about. Right, those three are going to be when you have the ball and when you don't have the ball. Players can cope with that, I think.
100%, and I think there's a lot of research that suggests that, you know, things in threes works. Do you know what I mean? So, but then, you know, just on that final point, that just point there, I think in recognizing the individual needs of the player, sometimes, and this is an experience that I've had recently as well, is that players may say, this is how I like to be coached. And they may be reluctant to kind of be receiving or giving information in another way, but actually it's not necessarily the methodology that was behind it that was the problem. It was the experience. So they might have had an experience where you asked them some questions. Now all of a sudden they said, no, I don't deal well with questions. But because the coach who was in question wasn't asking the questions in a maybe pressure-free environment, and just really, you know, being curious. So I just want to kind of add that as a side note. But any last thoughts before we conclude?
I think it's just to remember that player-led and player-centered, they're different, but they can dovetail.
Awesome. Well, there you have it, guys. Another coaching conversation with Pete and Yas. Today we looked at the differences between player-led and player-centered. Let us know your thoughts. Hit the like button, subscribe, and we'll be back next week.